So the topic we're going to cover is Hefker Besdin Hefker, right? Besdin's ability to, well, we'll see exactly what the ability is, but to make other people's money Hefker, or perhaps even more, to take money from one person and give it to another person. But till today, we're going to try to understand the nature of judicial legislative power, where it comes from, and what it is exactly that gives them the ability to use this mechanism called Hefker Besdin, which is how we get back into Sanhedrin. You'll see that one of the main sources is sort of a line in Daf Hey, which we'll get back to, which is sort of, you know, inconspicuous. You have sources? Yeah. But is in fact very, very important to understanding the nature of the monetary legal system. Okay, so, right, to start. So we have this notion called Hefker Besdin Hefker, which means, very simply, right, when Besdin declares somebody's money Hefker, so it's Hefker, defines it as ownerless, it is now ownerless, and they can take away people's rights to their own money. So, this sugya comes up in many places. One of the places here is in the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Pei Testament Beis, the first source over here. If you'll notice, this is an outline. You can get the basic idea of what's going on by following the outline. Okay, and I realized I originally had these with no margins, like I do with my cars, to get them down to less pages. But then I remember that people take notes on the side, so I put back margins. Okay. In general, I just showed Tikva. I just gave Shir to the guys in Gush, and it was 4 pages, narrow font, 11, like narrow margins, 11, whatever. And that wasn't as bad. 2 weeks ago, I gave 6 pages. I've given 3 shurim since 145. I'm starting to get tired. But okay, so the Gemara is like this: Shalach le Rav Chista le Rava biyad or Rav Acha bar Rav Huna. The Ein Besdin Masnin Lakar Dafrim and Atara. So the Gemara here is talking about an even less understandable mechanism than Hefker Besdin Hefker, called Akiras Davar Min Atara, the ability of the court system to suspend a law in the Torah. Which, besides for being sort of strange legally, is theologically very problematic. But I won't get into all the technicalities of that now. Probably in like 2 weeks I'll give Sharon that back in Gush. So the Gemara is like this: Vatanya. So, are Bezid not able to suspend the Torah? Vatani, the Brisa says, Meimisai Adam Yorishes Ishto Ketana. From when does a person start to inherit his wife, who is a minor? Beishamai Omrim, Misha Tamod Bikomasa, Is Omrim, Misha Dichnas Lechupa. We'll leave aside the actual machlokas. Relazar Omrim, Misha Tibayel, Vyarsho, Mitamela, Vilcheles, Begino, Truma. So, we have a 3-way machlokas. It's not relevant what exactly positions are for now. Beishamai Omrim, Misha Tamod Bikomasa. So we go back to one of the positions that Beishamai says, Mishatamad Bekamasa, whatever exactly that means, even if you didn't yet have Chopa. So the Gemara says, no, that can't be. Ema Mishatamad Bekamasa, Vitikanes Lachopa, Vahachi Kamar Lebeishamai Lebeishilel, and this is what Beishamai said Beishilel, Vikamritu Mishatakanes Lachopa, Yam Dekamasa Mahane Lechopa, Vilolo Mahane Lechopa. Realazar Mishatibal, Vamar Lazar Ema Sektana Klum, Ema Mishatigadel Vitibal. So, without getting into all the details of what's going on here, the point of it is, Ketani Mias Yorsha. Whatever this case is exactly, if a person married a Ketana, we say that he inherits her. The problem is, V'hachad Mirais Avua Yarisla. But, like, if they're not actually married, this is Kedushi Derabanan, so, who should inherit? The father. So, however we exactly understand all the parameters, when it is, here, the husband inherits, even though really the father should inherit. So the Gemara says, how is that possible? I mean, the Rabbanan Yaris La Baal, right? How could it be that on a Torah level, the father inherits, and on Midar Rabbanan, the husband inherits? So the Gemara says, Hefker Besdin, Haya Hefker. So the Gemara here says, no, it's not Akira Stafra Min HaTorah. It's not a case of suspension of the law, or alternatively, it is a specific case of suspension of the law, right? Those are the two possibilities. We'll come back to that in a second. But the reason that the Rabbanan can say that even though Midaraisa, the father should inherit his daughter, instead the husband inherits his wife, is because of this mechanism called Hefker Besdin. The Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, because Rabbi Yitzchak said, Minayin Shehefker Besdin Haya Hefker. How do we know that when Besdin declares something Hefker, that it is in fact Hefker? Shnei Amar, so we have two sources. One is from Ezra, where a chirim is declared that kol asher lo yavo l'shloshes hayamim katzas asarim v'askenim yecharam kol rechusho v'hui yibadel mikal agola. One is a pasuk in Ezra where a chirim is put in effect and says that anyone who does not appear within the next 3 days in front of the leaders, all of his property will become chirim, meaning will become hefker from him. He'll lose his rights. V'hu yibadel mikal agola. And he will be separated. There's the sources. Okay. And he will be separated from the congregation of the diaspora. Elazar offers another pasuk in Amar Mehacha from Yeshua, Eila Nachalos Asher Nachalu Elazar Kohen Yeshua Benun Rashi Avos Matos Ben Israel. These are the portions that were given, that were bequeathed by Elazar and Yeshua and the heads of the tribes. Inyan Rashim Eitzel Avos. And why do we compare the Rashim to Avot? Right? What is this? Drasha Rashi Avot Lamato Ben Israel. Elomer Lachama Avon Machilim Bneim Kol Mashi Yirtzu. Just like fathers bequeath to their children whatever they want, Af Rashim Manchilim Es Am Kol Mashi Yirtzu. So too the heads of the nation, the heads of the tribe, can bequeath, can give over property to people. Okay, so we have this mechanism called Hefker Bezin Hefker. Now, before we try to understand why it works, the parameters of it working, just to point out that, very simply, pshat, there are two types of Hefker Bezin Hefker. The case, one is where Bezin sets up a takana that systematically changes the way monetary law works. For example, in this case, the husband inherits instead of the father. Whenever you have a case of this nature, the husband inherits instead of the father. And similarly, in the next case, the famous halacha of Prusbul, that if Shemitah is approaching, so then Hillel, in order to ensure that people would continue to lend money, set up Prusbul, which meant that people legally give over their loans to the court, and the court collects on their behalf, and therefore Shemitah does not wipe out their monetary obligations. And the Gemara in Gittin says, Hillel saw that people were stopping to lend money. So Amar Beiskin Prusbul. So he got up and he instituted a Prusbul. And then the Gemara says, Ayu mi ika midi dmi raisa lo mishamta shvias v'takin rabban tishamet Amar Abayi sheval tasu. So the Gemara said, how could this work? So first Abayi says, maybe it's just as passive, but Rabba Amar said, no, Hefker Bezdin Haya Hefker. It works through the mechanism of Hefker Bezdin. Amar Yitzchak Minayin She Hefker Bezdin Haya Hefker. So in these cases, we have cases of Hefker Bezdin where it's systematic. It's Bezdin control the monetary system, and therefore they change monetary law, and the money does not go to one person, it goes to somebody else instead. The more classic case of Hefker Bezdin, and this is what's Ola from the Psukim, is Kol Asher Lo Yavo L'Shloshet Hayamim Katzad Asarim V'Askenim Yecharam Kol Rechusho, is one-time instances. If Bezdin decides they need to take away somebody's money, they have the right to do that. Right? That's the classic example of the Pasuk, that here as a one-time punishment, anyone who didn't come was penalized, he lost his money. Okay. So that's the first thing you need to know, that there is something called Hefker Bezdin Hefker, and it works on two planes, either on the individual case-by-case basis, where Bezdin decides it's necessary monetarily to take away somebody's property, or alternatively, cases where they set up takano, where they set up institutions that change people's rights to their money. Okay. The next question we have to ask, though, about Hefker Bezdin is, the words Hefker Bezdin Hefker tell us what? That Bezdin has the ability to do what with money? To Hefker, which means remove somebody's rights from it. But now if we go back to the cases that we have in the Gemara, so by let's say the Yerusha case, right? It's not just that the Rabbanan were mitaken, that the father doesn't get it, they were mitaken, that the husband does get it. Right, so the question we have to ask is, well, Hefker Bezdin definitely works to remove property. The question is, does it work to directly give property? Now, The original Takana does sound like he's giving property, but one could explain that no, that case simply he's removing it from the father, and then whatever mimela, separate rule, the husband gets it, or the husband already controlled it because it was in his property, and once you don't give the rights to the husband to the father, it goes to him. So there's still a discussion whether the power, whether Rabbanan have the power not only to remove rights to property but to give it. So, if we look back to the Gemara for a minute, right, if I looked at the Gemara, right, what would you think? So first, I already said in terms of the Takana, it sounds like they have the ability both to remove property and give it, right? But what else do you notice about the Gemara? So the Gemara brings two sources for Hefker Bez and Hefker, right? So now, if you look at the sources, what would they imply? And we have two psukim, so let's try each of them. The first one is Kol Asher Lo Yavo L'Shloshes Hayamim Kazerim V'Eskenim Yocharam Kol Ruchoshov V'Hu Yibadel Mikal Agola. It's still in the Gemara, right? Going back to the Gemara, right? The pasuk that the Gemara quotes from Ezra, right? This is four lines on the bottom, right? So from that pasuk, what's happening? They're setting up a penalty that what? They take it away. Now, where does it go? Yeah, I mean, just it doesn't go to them. It doesn't specify. It's chayrim. Mm-hmm. So from that pasuk, what would we derive?
Just take it away.
Take it away. Now, let's try the second pasuk, though. I mean, what does the second pasuk say? Right, Eil and Achalot, Asher and Achalot, Elazar, Kohen, Veshua, Ben Nun, Rashi, Avon, Matot, Ben Israel, Vichima, Inin, Rashim, Eitzel, Avot, Alon, Lachamavot, Manchilim, Nehem, Komashi, Yersu, Av, Rashi, Manchilim, Ezam, Komashi, Yersu. And so here we learn Hefker Bez and Hefker from
giving it to
me. Giving it to people just say their names when they're saying something, but what's your name? Okay. So in this case, right, what's going on in the Pasuk? They're giving it, right? They're not just removing it, they're giving it. So first thing you notice is that the two psukim seem to indicate two different perspectives on Hefker Bez Din. If you look at the next two sources, so first the Rajba and Gittin. The Rajba says, Rava Amar Hefker Bez Din Hefker. Mina Shaminan, so we learn from here, De Koach Bez Din Yafe Lahafker Mamon Mizeh Ulizakosa Lazeh. That from here we learn that Bez Din has the power not only to remove property, but to give it to somebody else. Afil Kodem Shebal Yado, even before the person actually acquires it, they have the power to directly give someone rights to property. V'chein Muchach Mikra. And this is what's clear from the pasuk, the Eila Nachalot, Asher Nachalu, the Ma Avad Manchilin, the Omrim, Sde Ploni Laploni, the Zachabom Yad, Af Kodem Shebal Yado, Af Rashim, Manchilin, Machomashi, Mishiyirtsu. Because we learn it out from a case of Nachala, and in a case of inheritance, as soon as the father dies, his children inherit. Now, it's true that each child doesn't inherit if there's two or three or four Yorshim, so the estate inherits, and all the children have equal rights to the estate, but it's true that they directly get rights to the estate. You don't have to be koned. And the Yamshel Shlomo sharpens it a little bit, and he actually points out what I just said, is that the two psukim seem to indicate these two different perspectives. It says, Din Hefker, Bez Din Hefker, Afil Lafkiya Mamon Shal Achar Lachlet Beyad Chaviro, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Minayin Shefker Bez Din Hefker, Shenamar, Kol Osher Lo Yovel, Shol Shalei Amim, Bazar Asarim, Baskenim, Yocharam Kol Rechusho Vegomer, Rilazar, Amar Mehacha, Eilan Achalot, Asher Nachalu, Elazar, Kohen, Vishua, Ben Nun, Rashi, Avot, Matot, Ben Yisrael, Vegomer, Vechi Mayin Yin Rashi, Meitel Avot, Elama, Avon, Malchil, Nchol, Mishi Yirtsu, Av Rajam, Malchil, Nchol, Mashi Yirtsu. And then he adds, V'nirid, the Had, the Rilazar, Adif, that which the second pasuk is better than the first pasuk, the alfina minei shiuchlu lafkiya mamon shel acher lachlit lachaveiro, and that may be in fact a machlokus in the Gemara. And the reason that Rabbi Elazar comes and adds a pasuk to the drasha of Rabbi Yeshua of Rabbi Yitzchak is because Rabbi Yitzchak's drasha only teaches you that Hefker, that Bez Din has the ability to remove rights. And the second pasuk teaches that not only do they have the ability to remove rights to property, but they even have the ability to give people rights. And the last source on this, if you look in the Yerushalmi, the next source, so the Gemara there says, "Hachad at Amar Umdin Ota Kamalakat Ruuya Lasas Venosin Laniim." So here the Gemara is talking about a Dirabanan case of Leket, right? There's in right throughout Zrayim, we have all these different rules of different things that go to poor people, shichcha, and things that are forgotten in the field, and peya, or the corner of the field, and leket, and olulo. So here we have the case of leket derabana. So the Gemara says, anything that touches the ground will belong to the poor people. Rabbi Avo, b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, kanas kanshu bo, she gadash al gabe likdin shalaniyim, ad kidon mezin, afil shogeg, afil krechot, afil chitim, al gabe sorin, afil gacho achirim, chot mi daito, afil kar laniyim vilo bo. And the Rabbanan added a kenas that anyone who piles their produce on top of that which belongs to the poor people, on top of the leket that's already there, doesn't matter if it was by accident, on purpose, it doesn't matter if it's discernible from that which belongs to the aniyim, if it's wheat mixed with barley and you could theoretically separate it out, it doesn't matter if other people besides for the owner put it there, it doesn't matter, it goes to the aniyim. Rabbi Ami b'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish de Beis Shammai hi. And Rabbi Ami says this can only work according to Beis Shammai. De Beis Shammai omrim hefker laniyim hefker. Where the Beis and the Pei are interchangeable, like they are in Arabic, right? Hebrew words in Arabic change to, right? This is like the river up north, right? The Bainus, which is the Pinus, depending on the language, right? Same thing here. Right? The Beis and Pei are interchangeable. So there's a machlokes b'shil Beis Shammai whether hefker laniyim have a hefker. Meaning, when I mafkir something, do I have to, in order for hefker to work, not hefker bezin, it's a regular case of hefker, do I have to be mafkir at, it's really hot. Are people cold or can you warm? Okay. It's okay. If that goes off, we'll be fine. Okay. So there's a machlokes in general b'shil Beis Shammai whether I'm allowed to be mafkir only to a certain group of people. And if I say, you know, this recorder, I'm just going to be mafkir it, am I allowed to say, I mafkir it such that I relinquish my rights, but only the people on this half of the room are allowed to be koned? If someone on people on this half of the room try to take it, it won't work? Or is that not hefker? Hefker has to mean I relinquish my rights, and therefore, if I relinquish my rights, I can't do anything. So Beis Hillel says, only hefker, lakol is hefker. Hefker laniyim lo abe hefker. If I try to partially relinquish my rights, that's not considered relinquishing. Beis Shammai says you're allowed to partially relinquish.
They're not allowed to say like, I'm like letting her go to any man except for that guy.
Right, because that's called a shir beget, right? The whole yisod of a get is harayat muteret l'chol adam, and if you hold it back, that's called a shir.
Right.
Meaning, in that sense, I mean, it's the same notion that whenever you're relinquishing rights, relinquishing implies full relinquishing of rights. So the Gemara says, this must be, according to Beis Shammai, that hefker laniyim is hefker. Why? Because what was the gzera here? That if you pile things up on top of leket, which belongs to
poor people,
then it itself becomes leket, which means it'll only belong to poor people. So the Gemara says this takana only makes sense according to Beis Shammai, who says hefker best and hefker laniyim hefker, that you're allowed to partially relinquish rights. And Amar le Rabbi Yasa, shamanu shu badri maiso shefker best and hefker. He adds that it's pater from maiser because hefker best and hefker, and therefore they made it right, really onless. Now, the Tosis Rid here, not really the Tosis Rid, the Rishon, but the Achron, who writes in the Yerushalmi, points out that this is yet another nafkamina. Because here, what does the Gemara say? That this is a function of Hefker Bezdin, but it only works, according to Beis Shammai, that it goes direct, that you're allowed to partially relinquish. Right? So what it seems to be, therefore, is that according to Yerushalmi, is Hefker directly giving it to the aniyim, or is it right? Or is it removing rights? So the Tosafot points out that here is only removing rights, because right, you're removing rights. The Gemara says that this type of Hefker Besen only works if you think you're allowed to partially be mafkir something, because here they remove the rights, and the mamela goes to the aniyim, right? But if you think that hefker best, it means I can directly give it to people, so what's the problem? Right? It's not according to Beis Shammai, because this is not a normal case of hefker best and hefker. Besdin is not relinquishing the rights. They're bequeathing it directly to poor people. Right? So the Tosfos Reid points out this is yet another nafkamina. Here the Yerushalmi is clear that it thinks that all hefker besdin is removing rights, and therefore the only way you could use hefker besdin to create leket would be if you held that hefker l'aniyim hefker, that you're allowed to partially relinquish rights. So then, just like you can partially relinquish rights, so besdin will partially relinquish the rights to the property. Okay, so that's the end of just section one. So just to review that, there are two types of hefker, just simply right bipshat. One is a ad hoc case where Besdin decides they need to remove somebody's rights to property. The other one is where they set up takanot based on their control of the monetary system. That's issue one. Issue two is, what is hefker besdin hefker? Do they have the power just to relinquish people's rights or to actually bequeath property to people? So as the Yom Tov Shlomo points out, this seems to be the machloket between the two psukim. If you think that it's derived from the cherem, where they were just removing rights, then all you know is that they can relinquish people's rights to property. If you think that we learn that from nachalot, where clearly you're giving it to people, then in fact they have the right to bequeath property. The Rashba rules, because we have the second pasuk, that hefker besdin works both to relinquish and to give. And then in the Yerushalmi, it seems clear that the Yerushalmi, though, believe that it was just removing rights, and therefore the only way to create leket derabanan, which is something which would be partial hefker, is if you hold that hefker laniyim hefker. But if you held that hefker besdin meant you could directly give people property, it would be clear from then you wouldn't be able to prove it, because it's not a classic case of hefker. You, in fact, are giving it to the poor people as opposed to relinquishing it and allowing them to be kona. Okay? Any questions in section one? Okay. So now the next question is, well, how does it work? So, as I pointed out before, the context of the Gemara in Yevamos is the more general question is, do the Rabbanan have the power to be oker davar min haTorah, to uproot rules in the Torah? So the Gemara there says, do the Rabbanan have the power to uproot the Torah? And the Gemara answers and brings the case of hefker besdin, and the Gemara says, maybe that's different because it's hefker besdin hefker. Now, how could one read the conclusion of the Gemara? Right, one of two ways. The question was, do the Rabbanan have the power to be oker davar min haTorah? Doesn't this seem to be an example? And the Gemara says, that's hefker besdin hefker. So the answer of the Gemara can be doing one of two things to the question. It can either
say yes
or no.
It's either supporting it or
right. So it's either rejecting it and saying, no, this is not akira davar min haTorah. It's hefker besdin hefker, which works through some other mechanism. And therefore, you can't prove that the Rabbanan in general have the power to uproot the Torah just because they have the right to be oker people's property. Or the answer could be,
this is the reason for why you
can't. Right, is that you can't prove generally like that they can be oker davar min haTorah, but this is just an instance of akira davar min haTorah. It just happens to be that you can't prove that they always have the right. Now, we can give a whole bunch of reasons why it would be true that monetary law is easier to uproot than ritual law. Right? For example, monetary law is, as the Gemara says, nitan lemechila. Right? In theory, I could just say, look, you owe me money. Forget it. Don't worry about it. Which shows that monetary law, in general, is less, objectively true metaphysically. Right? There's nothing inherent about monetary law. I can make whatever deal with you that I want. Right? To give an example of this. The Gemara in several places in Kiddushin Nav Sabach Aleph and Ksubas Nav Ayin Dalet has what we call Mishpatei HaTanai, the different rules that you need to make a Tanai. Right? Tanai Kafful, where you put the love, where you put the hain, right? Where you put the positive part of it, the negative part of it, etc. And the Gaonim Paskin, that when you're making a Tanai on a monetary case, like I make a deal with Miriam and, say I'll give you $100 if X, right? So then I don't need to fulfill all the rules of Mishpatei Atanayim. And the reason, presumably, is because, look, monetary law is fundamentally more fungible. Because, like, it's the yesod of monetary law is contract, is agreement. So I don't need formalities. So the same thing could be true by Kiras Avraham HaTorah. I could say, look, the Rabbanan are able to uproot things which are fundamentally more malleable, but they couldn't do it in general. So the first possibility is that Hefker Besen Hefker is a modified form of Akiras Tavram and HaTorah, but this depends on how you read the Gemara in Yevamos. When the Gemara says, do the Rabbanan have the power to be Okar Tavram and HaTorah, and the Gemara says, no, that's a case of Hefker Besen Hefker, is that a total rejection? Meaning, this is not Hefker, this is not Akiras Tavram and HaTorah, it's something else. Or is it, yes, this is Akiras Tavram and HaTorah, but you can't prove that they're able to do that by ritual law because they can do it by monetary law. And if you look, for example, here in Rashi, in Gittin, Rashi here says, look, Rava Amar, Lolam Bein Rabbanan De Pligi, Aderebi, V'Amri, Shvias, La Shmatas, Malve, Bezman, Azed, Da Raisa, V'Takin, Hild, Lo Tishame, Bein Larebi, D'Amar, Lav, Da Raisa, V'Amar Rabbanan, D'Tishame. So, right, he just explains what exactly a prusbel is, right, that it should be wiped out by Shemitah, and it's not. And he says, well, how does this work? So Rashi is very clear. He reads the maskana of the Gemara as a total rejection. That monetary law is not subject to Akiras Tavram and HaTorah. It's something else. And this is where we're going to eventually get to, is what is that something else? And that's going to be where we get to, specifically in Rashi Shita. But Rashi thinks, at this point, all we know is that Rashi thinks it's not Akiras Tavram and HaTorah. It's not a suspending of the law. On the other hand, if you look at the Rambam, so the Rambam in Perek Chof Dalet of Hilchos Sanhedrin, so this is the Perek where the Rambam talks about everything that is Akiras Tavram and HaTorah. For example, Halacha Dalet, he says, Yeish lebezdin lahalkos misha enu mechuyev malkos ulaharog misha enu mechuyev misa. Bezdin, if it decides it has to, has the right to give lashes to someone who isn't obligated to get lashes, or kill someone who doesn't deserve to get the death penalty. Not to violate the words of the Torah, but to protect it. And once Bezdin sees that people have, you know, whatever, they're breaching some law, they're allowed to set up a fence to strengthen it as they see fit. Hakol, Haraz, Shah, temporarily, Lo Sheyik Bahalach Ladaras, but not forever. And then he gives an example, Masa Vehilku Adam Shabal Ishto Tachaz Ilan, they once gave Malkus to someone who slept with his wife in public under a tree, which, well, not proper, is not a formal Isser of any sorts, but they decided that they needed to give Malkus. There's another case of someone who rode a horse on Shabbos, which is only a violation of a Derabbanan, not of one of the 39 Malachos, and they killed him. And Shimon Meshadach once killed 80 women for witchcraft without all the normal procedural rules of the court, because that was what the time needed. And halacha hey is if they need to, they have the ability to give malchus to someone simply because he has a bad reputation, that people are talking about him, that he's sleeping around. Or zichusan. I'll get to that in just 1 second. And similarly, Bezdin has the ability to be mafkir money, as they see fit, to protect the religion. So, and then it just continues, right? Halacha Zayin is that the ability to put people in chayrem. Halacha Chet, if they need to cause, you know, a fight. Halacha Tet, that they can put people in prison. And Al Chayyud sums up the whole parak. Kol ilo advarim lefi mashiira adayin shezer roi lakach v'shasha tzricha v'chol yu ma'asav l'shem shamayim. In all these things, they can do whatever they need to do. Valya covered up Ria's kalbeinav, but he shouldn't. You know, the dignity of people shouldn't be light in his eyes. Sharei hudochalos losa shildevrem, and then he explains why. So the Rambam puts basically all the cases of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah together. Now, how I know that this is a case of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah is a little bit complicated. Really not so complicated. The Rambam in Perek Beis, Halacha Dalet V'Chos Mamrim, when talking about Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah by Derabanans, meaning you're able to suspend a Derabanan, he explains that the reason I know that you're allowed to uproot a Derabanan when you need to is because it can't be more chamur than de'araisas, which you're able to uproot, and then brings examples from the 24th parak of Sanhedrin. So it's clear that he viewed this parak as being about Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah. So simple pshat, the Rambam thought that Hefker Bezdin is itself a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, maybe a limited expression of it, but it itself is in fact Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah. Now, we can, of course, ask the question, does he actually think it's Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, or does he group them together in the same parak simply because you use all these mechanisms for the same reason? Meaning, even if Hefker Bezdin and Hefker is a different idea, which we'll get to what that would be, you only utilize it if you need it, just like you only utilize Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah when you need it. So it's possibly just grouping them together because the motivation is the same and not the actual mechanism. But it sounds like the Rambam actually thinks that Hefker Bezdin is a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah. Now, one thing I swallowed there in the Rambam,
is there a board here?
No. Just to show what this is. Right, the Rambam here said that v'chein yesh l'dayan tamid l'hafkir mamon sheyesh lo ba'ilim u'ma'abed v'nosein, or some have the gears of zichusan. Right? Now, what's the difference between those two girsot? Right, this is the halacha vav. Right, where I put the parentheses, where I just added from a different girsa. Right. So, what's the difference between the two girsot? Right, me'abed zichutan or me'abed vinotain. Right, meaning the machloket we had right before is, does Bezdin have the ability to remove property or even give it? Is ma'abed zechutan means they can remove it, ma'abed v'notein means they can give it. Now, why are there two girsot? So it's actually really simple. This is v'notein. That's zechutan, right? I mean, this is a classic manuscript problem, is that if there was a smudge above the vav, or alternatively, right, the smudge got cut off, this would turn from a vav into a zayin, right, or a zayin into a vav, and then the nun can, if it goes just a little bit, especially if you're doing this not in script, but you're doing it, you know, a nun is like this, and a chaf is like this, basically,
yeah.
Right? They're basically the same, right, they could be the same, so you can see how this textual problem could happen. The Ravash Weiss points that out in the Ravash. So the Rambam's Girsa, we're not exactly sure which one it is. It's one of those two. You can see the mistake happens.
That's a crucial.
Yes, obviously they mean the opposite. You know, if you believed in the pasuk thing, then you would know he put the pasuk that implies that he could remove property and not the other pasuk. So if the Yamshar Shlomo's drasha is read of the pasuk is correct, and the Rajba's read of the pasuk is correct, then we conclude the correct girsa would be zechutan and not vinotain, though the better girsa of the Rambam imply that it is the actual girsa is vinotain, despite the fact that he has that pasuk. So he probably just doesn't hold of this distinction between the psukim, or the Rambam isn't always medayik in which pasuk he chooses. But anyways, so to summarize part two now, and we'll just get to the last point in a second, is Hefker Bezdin simply a function of Akira Sarvamana Torah, meaning the Beis Din's general ability to uproot laws when it is necessary, or is it something else? So Rashi is very clear that it's something else, which means that he views the answer of the Gemara that this is not Akira Sarvamana Torah, it's Hefker Beis Din Hefker, is a complete rejection of the question. The Rambam, while it's not 100% clear, because he may think that it's only a question of motivation, that they're both used for the same reason, the way he groups it makes it sound like it is a function of Akira's Davra Minat Torah. That point is made explicitly in the next source, which is the Ritva. So this is the Ritva in his Tshuvos. It also is there in the Ritva in Yevamos, but it's clearer in his Tshuvos. Tshuva Kofpei says, Umiyu Masher Kasuv V'Tanot HaTawein Shel Kalara She'ein Bezdin Osin Takanot Hafkaot Mamon El Azoshum Geder Usyag Zemeru. That which you said, that you can only use Hefker Beis Din if you need it for a geder, that's true. The chain goes of a Rambam Zal. Let's just skip to the end of these, you know, whatever, plus signs, which is just the haros of Bar Ilan. V'harbe min agdolim Zal, v'gam das machras kein, ula yesh lomo midivri rabbeinu, shigam binyani mamon ein Hefker Beis Din, Hefker Elas is geder. So it seems from the Rambam that you need it to be, right, the same way for Akira's Davar Minat Torah, you need a geder osyag. The same thing is true for Hefker Beis Din. V'chein mash from Peirush Rashi, Rav Amar, Avo Midivrei Harash. From the Rashi, it sounds not that way. Mash from Hefker Beis Din, Afilu L'chol Tzarech, Acher V'lo L'geder Osyag, V'afal Pi Shiyish Mokom K'tzas La'ashiv Al Zeh. And even though you could challenge this from the Sugya in Ha'isha Rabba and Yevamot, to the Bazar to Usivu Me'a Yerusha Pariku, Hefker Beis Din Hefker, that after you said, is this Akira Stav Minat Torah, and you said, no, it's Hefker Beis Din Hefker, Hadar Usivu Me'idach Masnisa, you then, the discussion continues, v'tertzu amaskana alayu migdar milzah shayni, that at the end of the Gemara's conclusion is that Beis Din has the ability to uproot the Torah if it's l'migdar milzah, if they need it to protect the Torah. D'shmamina, so what the Ritva says is, look, d'shmamina d'lagami mamon d'shach evgar Beis Din below migdar milzah namihi, el shu devarach amri inza kusha aflifi girsazo. So he said, look, basically what it comes down to is, besides for the question that we had before, meaning, when the Gemara says, is this Akira's Davar Minat Torah? No, it's Hefker Beis Din. The next question we have to ask is, well, at the Maskana of the Gemara, we conclude that Beis Din, in fact, have the power to be Okir Davar Minat Torah if they need it. Right? If they need it, let me get a milsa. So now, even if you read the original question as, is there Akira's Davar Minat Torah? No, there's Hefker Beis Din Hefker. Once the Gemara concludes that there is such a thing as Akira's Davar Minat Torah, do we retroactively reinterpret all the answers and say, well, Akira's Davar Minat Torah, Hefker Beis Din Hefker, is itself a function of Akira's Davar Minat Torah? And he says, what's it? Talmud, because again, Gersh Shigars and Jam Ella Migdar Milsa Shiny. He said, really, what it comes down to, and this is a very subtle linguistic point, is at the end of the Gemara says, it brings a case, can't you do Akira's Davar Minat Torah? And then the Gemara says, Migdar Milsa Shiny. So there's two Girsos. One is Migdar Milsa Shiny. The other is Ella Migdar Milsa Shiny. And what's the difference? Right? Migdar Milsa Shiny means there's Akira's Davar Minat Torah in general. We don't hold of that. But there's a category called Migdar Milsa where we apply Akira's Davar Minat Torah. It's very specific, but there's no such general rule. If you read Ella, then what does that mean?
It makes it separate.
It says, rather, all the things that you said before are not true. Akira's Davar Minat Torah works as long as Migdar Milsa. Right? So now, as the Ritva points out now, right, so first he explains just textually how the Rambam gets it. The Rambam says, Ella Migdar Milsa Shiny, which is rather, all those explanations you said, such as Hefker Beis Din is not really Akira's Davar Minat Torah, were wrong. Ella Migdar Milsa Shiny, you really, in fact, can be Okir Davar Minat Torah, as long as it's Migdar Milsa, as long as it's protecting the Torah. But now, what's the nafka mina between whether you think that Hefker Beis Din Hefker is a function of Akira's Davar Minat Torah because you have the Gersa Ella Migdar Milsa Shiny, or you think that Hefker Beis Din Hefker is something else, and it's not Akira's Davar Minat Torah? So the difference is, do you need Migdar Milsa to justify Hefker Beis Din? Meaning, let's say Beis Din decides that they just want to give somebody's property away, for whatever reason. And they want to give a They don't want to punish someone because he's violating an Isser. They want to reward someone. So they decide the best way to do it is to take some property from, I don't know, wherever. In theory, could they do that? So it depends. If you think that Hefker Bezdin is a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, then it's limited by the same constraints of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, meaning it can only be used if there's a need, L'migdor Milsa, to protect the Torah. And you can't just use it because you think that's the best monetary policy at the moment, or the best societal policy. You can only use it if you actually have to protect some Isser. But if you think that the Gemara's conclusion is that Hefker Bezdin is something else, and we're getting to it, then you might even be able to use it when it's not L'migdor Milsa. Yeah, Miriam.
Couldn't you also say that because Hefker is a function of Akira Tavar, that therefore when there's a need for an appropriation of property, then they have the right to take away someone else's rights to the property?
Meaning, yeah, but the type of things that allow you to be Akira Tavar Natura are usually protecting Isurim. It's not just like there's a need, like, you know, generally, it's okay. A very specific type of need.
No, meaning if it's a function of meaning because
right.
There's appropriation, Beit Din has the right to take it from somewhere else.
Oh, and even give it. I mean, yeah, no, for sure. Meaning the question of whether you are able to take away money or even give it doesn't seem to hang on Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah because, right, if you think that what justifies Hefker Bezdin is Akiras Tavar, so if what's necessary is to give property, then I could even give property. If it's whatever mechanism it is, and we'll get to that next thing, then also, presumably, right, that the question of giving and or just relinquishing doesn't seem to hang on the Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, because either justification, well, whatever, we'll see if the other justification works, seems to allow you to do that. There seems to be two separate questions. The question is, what type of motivation would justify employing Hefker Bezdin, whatever Hefker Bezdin means? Would it be that you need to protect some Isser or not? Now, I agree with you that if you think that Hefker Bezdin is a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, it makes no sense to say they don't have the ability to give property. Right? That, I think, is true. But I think you could, right, even if you said it wasn't a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, you could also say they have the ability to give. Right? But I agree with you. It's a one-way nafkamina. Right? Meaning, if it's Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, almost definitely you can do whatever you need to do. Right? As opposed to something else. But if it's something else, you might also have the ability to give it. Right? I mean, it's a one-way nafkamina, right?
Right.
Okay. So, to summarize section 1 and 2, right? So 2, we dealt with the question, right? What is Hefker Bezdin a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah? The Ritva points out it seems to be totally in this Girsa in the Gemara of Ella Migdar Milsa Shiny or not, meaning, at the end, do we retract and say, look, you can do Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah in monetary cases, everywhere, as long as it's L'migdor Milsa? Or do we say that no, we maintain that Hefker Bezdin is not Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, all the different cases are not, and then there's something called Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah. Rashi says it's not Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, Rambam seems to say it is. The nafkamina between those seems to be whether you need L'migdor Milsa as a justification, meaning does it have to be that I'm protecting Klal Yisrael from some invidious violation of the Torah system, or I just think it's necessary for whatever social communal reasons to use Hefker Bezdin and Hefker. Miriam is correct that if it is Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, it would seem to be that it makes no sense to say that it's only they only have the right to relinquish. I mean, Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah allows a lot of things, like killing people. Right? Presumably, it's no worse to say that I could give over property all the other things that are covered by Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah. Okay. And so that's section 1 and 2. And again, just the parenthetical point we made in section 2 was that the Rambam's Girsa of Vinno Sein or Zichudan is based on a very, very easy scribal error in one of two directions. And that brings us back to section 1, right, that the two psokim seem to indicate different possibilities. Do they only have the ability to remove property rights or even give them? Okay, so that's section 1 and 2. If Hefker Bezdin, this brings us to section 3. If, in fact, Hefker Bezdin is simply a function of Akiras Tavra Min HaTorah, so I don't need to locally justify Hefker Bezdin Hefker. I need to explain theologically why it makes any sense that Chazal have the ability to suspend Torah law. But I don't now have to explain why specifically they have the rights to suspend monetary law. I mean, once, this makes sense, right? Once I think that Bezdin has the right to kill people, right? I don't need explanation why they also have the ability to take away money or give money, right? If I think this is simply a function of their right to suspend law, so I need to theologically explain why that works, and that's a much more difficult thing to do. But that's all I have to do. I don't have to locally explain why money specifically is in their power. But if I say, like Rashi, that this is not a function of a Kiras Sefer Min HaTorah, that this is not considered a violation of law, that's fine. But then what justifies Beis Din taking money from somebody and giving it to somebody else, or even just relinquishing people's property rights? So, before we actually read the sources, and I suggest a mahalach, what do people think? And here, feel free to draw on anything you know about legal theory. In fact, I encourage you to think about legal theory.
Could you repeat the question?
What?
You repeat the question.
Okay, meaning, let's assume there's not a Kiras Sefer Min HaTorah. Right? It's not some function of the general right of Beis Din to suspend law. Which means that this is not considered a violation of law. Right? To rephrase the question. It's not a Kiras Sefer Min HaTorah, that means Hefker Beis Din works within the constraints of law rather than outside the constraints of law. Right? If it's outside the constraints of law, I need to explain why Beis Din has the right to suspend law. But once they're suspending law, I don't need to explain what's unique about money. But if it's not a Kiras Sefer Min HaTorah, this means it works within the framework of law. So what about law would tell us that Beis Din uniquely has rights to money, such that I wouldn't need to rely on extra legal mechanisms to allow Beis Din to have this power?
Such as a Kiras Sefer Min HaTorah.
Right, meaning I don't need to rely on it. Or meaning if I'm relying on a Kiras Sefer Min HaTorah, I don't need to explain
it's
it.
Really specific to money.
Yeah.
Mammon is one of the things, or the only thing that you're allowed to the
deed
for yourself, like only in cases of mammon, like
meaning
you
can
an average person would be able to make a deed for themselves in terms of mammon,
right?
Be able to, that's what I'm meaning. That goes back to the same question of why the person could do that for themselves in mammon.
Okay, so let's flesh it out, right? Meaning you're onto something, but let's just flesh it out.
What do you mean by make a deed for yourself?
Meaning, let's say, like,
you don't have to go to a beach and you can decide for yourself.
Yeah, right.
You
oh, yeah. The money that's yeah. If someone, like, steals something from you, you can, like, make him give you the money.
Meaning of it in a dinul nafshe, that may be a function of Beis Din, it may not be, right? That's a machlokas misharim bavakama, right? So, meaning what? So now flesh it out. Meaning if meaning of it in a dinul nafshe is that since I'm of an dinul, right? Is since you stole money from me and I know that, I'm allowed to just take it from you, right? But that's because I own the money and you took it from me.
Right.
So my rights to take it back stem from my ownership. So what would give Beis Din the right to do that?
Because in a case when people aren't making justice for themselves, it's the responsibility of the victim.
Maybe because they decide it's their property, right, and belongs to them.
Right, but Hefker Beis Din is not usually used when it's the technical letter of the law. Right? I mean, they're using it to institute new laws.
I'm saying in that case, like,
oh, well, but there, I don't need Beis Din to tell me that you owe me the money if you took it from me, right? The whole thing of Hefker Beis Din is it's when you don't really owe me the money, right? Beis Din says you do, or it takes away your money when you actually had rights to it,
once
right?
Once they seize the property, does it become theirs?
Well, yeah, they can give it to somebody else.
Well,
can they give it to someone else? That's the whole question. But
right. Well, if they have the rights to give it to someone else, it seems like
then
It is theirs,
okay.
So that makes a lot of sense.
The fact that, like, they're the governing, like,
for that.
It's like in American law, how, like, the American government can take away your property.
Which is called what?
Eminent domain.
Eminent domain.
So it's just like they can take your property and pay you of its current value. But
because?
Still, because for the betterment of society, because they're creating something there.
It belongs to them.
Well, no, it doesn't belong to them, but they're taking
it. But it does.
So that.
That's
like,
perfect, yeah. It just names? Just
Lisa.
Achella.
Okay.
Socialism.
No.
Not really, though.
Okay, so you're saying because they own it, and you're saying because...
To make it, I guess, because they're in charge. And like.
Because they're in charge.
To use for something better.
Okay. So far we have two possibilities, and we'll flesh them out in a second. One is because, whatever this means, the court system owns the money. And the second one is, they're in charge, so they can do it, and that's all there is to it.
But also more that they can, like, benefit society as opposed to just it's like yours.
Right, meaning.
But they, even if it doesn't benefit society,
yeah.
Well, maybe it does benefit society, but we just don't know yet how it is supposed to. Like, maybe
Okay. I'm not saying that it for sure will, but I'm saying that Basin still has the right to.
Okay. Now the third part is. Now what do we call this? What's the phrase? Social contract. Right. So now we have. Good. So now we have. Good. So now we have three explanations here so far. Is there, what's your name?
I'm Dina.
Okay, Dina. So we have social contract. We have Beis Din is in charge, and we have Beis Din owns the money, right? Three explanations. Good, that's all we needed. I mean, if someone has another explanation, I don't know if I have a Rishon to back any of anything else up, but with those three, I do.
Just wrong.
No, I just don't have one, or at least not on the sheet. I might have someone somewhere else. Okay, so, and this brings us back to the Gemara and Sanhedrin. So, let's start with your position, that they just have the right to do it. So, if you look at the Gemara and Sanhedrin, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Hai man debai lemei dandina, if someone wants to judge, v'itam ibai lemiftarap, to the point where if he makes a mistake, he'll be pukter, because if someone is in fact a judge, even if there's a certain amount of room for judicial mistake, what should he do? Lishko reshusa mibe resh kalusa. He has to get permission to judge from the resh kalusa, who is?
Exilarch.
Exilarch, right? The exilarch is?
The head of
is the head of?
Boss.
Of what? Meaning specifically what type of boss? Well, specifically, he's a political leader.
Right.
He's not a religious leader, he's a political leader. Right? I mean, that's...
between the Jews and the head of the country.
Yeah, meaning, you know, if you know historically, the exilarch from the time of the Gemara through the end of the Gaonate is the political, right? For whatever reasons, right, this is a function of Muslim countries, right? Because in Muslim countries, the status of Jews were...
second class.
The official term was... right, they're dhimmi, right? Right, they're dhimmi, meaning they're a respected second class, which means that they have certain political rights. And one of the things that you have is the exilarch, the resh galuta, who, right, is in charge of the internal affairs, and he's given the rights by the governing body to act as the internal governance of the Jewish people. Mechena reshmuel, resh kol reshusim bei resh galuta. So the Gemara says, "Pshita lahacha umehasam, lahamehacha lahacha umehasam lahasam, mehacha lahasam mahani." Within Bavel, for Bavel, getting permission from the exilarch works. Within Eretz Yisrael, from getting rishus from whoever the governing body in Eretz Yisrael, it works. Even from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, it also works. Why? Dahacha shevet v'hasam mechokek. Because in Bavel, shevet, which means. What's shevet? Well, the other word of shevet?
Stick.
Stick. It's a rod, right? I mean, to beat someone with, right? It's a punishing stick. Well, not necessarily, but that's what it means here. Vaz and mechokek, right? And there, what's mechokek?
Lawmakers.
So the Gemara says, Kedetanya lo yosher shevet mi Yehuda. It says in the Braisa that the scepter, really shevet is scepter, it's the stick that represents power. Right, or punishment, or whatever, the scepter shall not depart from Yehuda. Who are these? Because, right, what's the problem? The exegetical problem Chazal are dealing with is that
the Shevet did, yes.
Exactly, right. They're not king. So it says, "Elu Rashi Galio Shebibavel Shirod in Israel b'Shevet." These are the exilarchs who use their power, their political might, to keep the Jews in order, meaning even though they're not actually the kings, traditionally the exilarch was a descendant, or theoretically was a descendant of the Davidic dynasty. So even though he doesn't have independent power, he functionally acts as the internal Jewish king, because he has power. And the lawmaker, Elu b'nei banav shel Hillel shelamdin Torah b'rabim. These are teachers, these are Torah teachers. So Rashi says, and Tosafot says, Shevet, Lashon Srara. Shevet means rulership. V'yesh lahen rishos lahafkir. And what's his indication? They have the ability to be mafkir. Dehefkir bezin hefkir. Dechsev v'chol asher lo yavo. B'yavamos v'ishter rabba. So the Dvar Avram, in a very, very long piece, I didn't give you, it's the first piece in Dvar Avram, points out, and Tosus says the same thing, this implies here that Shevet is Adif, the power is more important. In Psachim, it implies the opposite, that in terms of halacha, Babel listens to Eretz Yisrael, but Amar Rabbeinu Tam, Dahani Mili, B'milsa D'Yisra V'Hetir, that's by ritual law. D'Bnei Yitzral Chakim Eitzvei, D'Avir D'Yisrael Machkim. Because in terms of ritual law, in terms of Torah, Eretz Yisrael is smarter, because the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes you smarter. K'damar Hacha, D'Ikru Michokek, and that's what it says here, that the people in Eretz Yisrael are Michokek, are lawmakers. Shemilamdim Torah B'Rabim, meaning they teach Torah. Avalainyan Hafkaz Mamon Lipater. But in terms of removing monetary rights, the Hefker Bezdin and Hefker, Adive B'nei Bavel to Ikru Shevet. B'nei Bavel are better. Why? Shirodin as Am B'Makel. Because they, right, control people because they can punish them. V'ayinu Taima Mishum D'Rosh Golam Azkirim. Mizcharim. V'nasi Sheretzal Mina Kevo. K'damar B'Yerushalmi. Okay, that's
Remember?
What? They control the government, and they
is that with
including
the rabbis and their
mom. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the machlokas in the Middle Ages, right? The where it came to it, normally there was sort of like a the Reish Galuta was the technical head of the Sanhedrin, like the technical head of the yeshiva, right? The technical head of the rabbinic, because he was the political power, and really, really, the person who was in charge was the right, the Rosh Yeshiva, right? This came to a fore. During which machlokas? The machlokas between Rasajia, right, Sajia Gon, and right, David Ben Zakkai, right, the exilarch, and Sajia, where they vied for power, where the question really became, who is actually more powerful, the head of the yeshiva or the Reish Galuta, and they put each other in Chiram, and there was a whole mess. But, right, basically the system was pretty smooth until you got to Sajia Gaon, where the Reish Galuta is the, you know, gives the technical stamp to rabbinic power, right? He's the person behind it, even though he himself is not necessarily Talmud Chacham. The Gaon, in theory, is supposed to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and then there's, right, so there's the Exilarch, and there's the Gaon. Now, the Gaon and Rosh Yeshiva, they all were political, whatever. But, so what does Rashi say, right? Where does the power of Hefker Besdin come from?
From Surah.
From Surah, in other words.
Because they're the...
Because it does.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, it's very simple. Right? He makes a very straightforward argument. No lumdus here. Right? There's nothing hard and conceptual about this. They're in charge. Therefore, they control the law. That includes monetary system. They have the right to punish. They have the right to set the law. They have the right to, and they have the power to enforce it. If you have the power to enforce, then you have the power to legislate. And that's it. There's nothing more to it. Right? Rashi makes a very straightforward argument with no justification for it. It's the right might is right argument. That why do they have the right to be mafkir money? Because they're the boss. That's part of law. Law means that the person in charge is in charge. It's tautologous, right? It just is. It's definitional. But that's in fact which is what you were saying. Look, that's all there is to it. It's reminiscent of, right, the notion of, right, dina de malchus adina. Meaning, depending on which explanation you take, Rabbeinu Yonah's explanation is similar to this. It's basically like, look, why is Dina Machus Adina? Because it is. Or to put it in a different way, if you look at the next source, Rashi says, look, what's the source for Dina Machus Adina? So Ksheira, the Dina Machus Adina, he's explaining why in certain circumstances non-Jewish witnesses work. Says the Dina Machus Adina, V'yavo b'isha nosim v'akam l'Yisraelim heim, chutz megid de nashim dolav, and ikrizis nenu hovo lo shaychi v'toraz gidin v'kidushin. For monetary documents, you can accept non-Jewish witnesses under certain circumstances, but for Gittin or Kiddushin, you can't. Why? Because a non-Jew can't sign a Shtar Kiddushin because he's not in the world of Kiddushin, but he can sign a monetary Shtar. Why? Aval Adinin Nitztav B'nei Noach. Why is he allowed to? Meaning, why is Din the Malchusa Dina allow non-Jews to set monetary law because nitzavu al dinin. What's dinin?
One of the seven
mitzvot of Noach. So what's the argument that Rashi is making very straightforwardly here? Yeah, that's all there is to it. Is why does Dina Mahusa work? Because if God said that every government in the world must set up some legislative and judicial body, that is just the way it works, then what follows from that? They must have power. Right? If central to God's vision of the world is that there are governments, because otherwise, without it, people would eat each other alive. So, government means nothing if it has no power. So, I know, this for people who are really formalists, this is very problematic, because Rashi really doesn't give an explanation. He really makes a very de facto claim, which is...
Why do you have to mean absolute power? Like, they can have power, but where does that extend?
So they don't necessarily have absolute power, but Rashi seems to think they really do, right? They really do, or at least monetary power. They also happen to have the power to enforce. Where does it come from? It comes because it comes. Right, that's it. You don't have to say that, right? But Rashi does, right? So perspective one is to say, look, all there is to Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is that it comes from the governmental powers of Bezdin. Bezdin is the government. For society to work, someone has to be in charge, and being in charge has to mean something. And if it has to mean something, then it does. And that's all there is to it. And that's why Din Machutza Dina, the reason we have to respect the law, is because since there must be law, it must be kept as law. Law without people keeping it, without people who are bound to it, is meaningless. Right? This is why, one of my favorite cases, that apparently at this point, jaywalking in New York is a law on the books, which is not enforceable. Like, there's no punishment on the books. You can't be punished for jaywalking. It's just illegal. In halacha, that's meaningless. Because definitional to something being law is that, at least Dina Machuza, is that it's enforceable. If it's like they say you shouldn't do that, but they won't do anything, then that's not recognized. Right? Part of law is that it's enforceable. So that's perspective one. Perspective two, and this is what you said, which is, and if you look here, this Eitan Schnell pointed this out to me, if you look at the Ritva, in Nedarim, the Ritva says like this, he's talking about Nidarim, and he says, just like there are Yados and Kinuyin, meaning there are ancillary ways of making a vow, the same thing is true about Hektish. Omar, Etein, Kach, Vekach, Legavo, if you say I'm going to give this and this to Beis HaMikdash, Ola, Aniyim, Oesa, Mitzvah, Zav, V'chulei, V'hayim, V'shum, Yados, Dididre, Hektish, V'chein, Kol, Chayotze, Bo, V'chein, Adim, Omar, Harei, Alay, Lavi, Konem, O, Konach, Chayim, V'karban, V'shum, Kinuyin. Anytime I say this is going to a Konem, this is going to the Beis HaMikdash, whatever, it works. Ukiditnan, Call kinuy charam kicharamim. The charam have a lishne de hektish, and he said, and this is true of chirim because chirim means hektish. And then his proof text is milashon kol chirim be Yisrael. Now that's the pasuk from where, right? Where's the notion of chirim come from? Where did we see it before? From Ezra, meaning chirim is not just what the Ritva points out is chirim is not a technical term. Chirim is a formal term, which means not that it becomes. How does it become Hefker? Via some mechanism like Hektish. But what's the rule by Hektish? Ein anem oser davar sheino shelo. In order to make something Hektish, you need to own it. Now, if we learn out Hefker, Bes, and Hefker from the world of Charamim, and Charam is not just I relinquish rights, but I relinquish rights by creating a quasi-din Hektish or a full-din Hektish, so what does that indicate? That they own it. That it's not just that they're in charge, but they own it. Now, why could we justify that, right, in political theory here, right? So, man, there are different ways. We could get back to what you said, which we'll hold off for a minute, which would be social contract. Or you just say, look, it's not that they're powerful and might is right. It's that, look, we run specifically the commercial part of society through governmental means, right? We don't leave it to total laissez-faire, right? We have government oversight. We have, right, government make currency, right? Even if you have laissez-faire, they create currency, right? And especially now where currency, for example, is not dependent on the gold standard, where what gives currency value? Trust in the economy of a certain government. So the monetary system, by definition, is simply a function of government. Not because of their power necessarily, but because at some level they simply, right, they produce money, right? If they were tomorrow to say this is not our currency, then it would dissipate in power. In fact, there's a fascinating machlokas acharonim between the Chasam Sofer and the Onig Yom Tov. Can you use paper money for kedushei kesef? Right? Because kesef in the time of Chazal meant something with intrinsic value. But money no longer has intrinsic value, right? Or actually, right, this is actually interesting. In the time of the Chasam Sofer and the Onig Yom Tov, they worked on the gold standard, which meant money did not have intrinsic value. It was like a check, right? It was like an IOU. So they argued, well, is an IOU money or is it a shtar? So they argue, is it kedushei kesef, kedushei shtar? Now that we've moved back away from the gold standard, in fact, kesef now actually has intrinsic value, ironically, right? It has intrinsic value because it doesn't represent anything. Its value is intrinsic, but it is totally representational, not even of money, of gold, but of power, right? So perspective two is to simply say that it's not about their power per se, it's about their control of the monetary system. Is that since government controls, to whatever extent, depending on capitalist, socialist, laissez-faire capitalism, different types of democracy is republic, right? Direct democracy is in the hands of the people, is in the hands of the representatives, in the hands of no one, is in the hands of everyone, etc., etc., etc. However it works, the government at some level owns the monetary system. They control the monetary system. So that's perspective two.
This can also be applied to the social contract.
Right. The third perspective, right, and could explain the second perspective, yeah. Right? This may or may not be distinct from the second perspective, but in theory it could be. I could construe an argument that it would be, is, and if you skip, I'll leave for a moment the technicalities to the next page, and this is a not so well-known piece at all, right, Clapper pointed out to me once, in Torah's Nevi'im of the Maariv Chayyus. Maariv Chayyus is a very interesting thinker in general. Maariv Chayyus holds the his badge of honor is that he's the only person in Shas Vilna who had a PhD. Right. His echo is on the back. Very interesting thinker. Has one of his fascinating works is Torah's Nevi'im, which is political theory of sorts of the Torah, and he takes the social contract, and he says, how do you know that a king has the ability to punish people if he needs to? And how do you know that he doesn't have the ability to take away money? If we know he can punish, then why can't he take money? This is asserting that this is the case, that kings have power over people's body, but not over their money. So therefore, I have to say something new. All rules of the king, meaning of government, they're just a function of communication, of agreement between the king and the people. Because people agree to give up their rights, their monetary rights, their rights to their body, so that there's a governing body who can fight their wars, who can take care of them. But since we know that people, in fact, don't give up their rights to money unless you need it, or in America, if you need eminent domain, right, it's only if the government needs it. Shuvah, davar muvan me'atzmo, therefore it's self-evident. So then we go back to the normal law, and the government doesn't have right over the money. And not only their property were they mafkir for the rights of the king, and for the benefit that you would get of the government. And even though you aren't able to commit suicide, you don't really own yourself. And even to damage yourself is asur. Came in the Kaimel and the Rodev Shorodev Achavir Largo. Hine Damo Masr Yad Kol Adam. Since we paskin that a Rodev can be killed by anyway, since the king acts in that role of the benefit of everyone, and someone who wants to uproot the good of society, and some levels of rodev, and therefore social contract binds people to the government and allows them to control their money, allows them to control their body. This is in a much more offensive control of this in Rishol Yisraeli's article about kibiyah. Remarz Chais's notion is really not offensive. If you look there, Rav Yisraeli makes the same argument, but then argues that it depends, in order for social contract to work, you need to assume that people own their bodies, and therefore they have the right to subject it to social contract, because otherwise the government would only have monetary rights and not would not be able to punish. So that's fine, which is basically the Maritz Chayes' argument at some level, right? Even though he says they don't have the rights, but he finds some other mechanism. The problem is that Israeli then argues that Jews
don't have the ownership,
don't own their bodies because they belong to God, and non-Jews do, and therefore Jews aren't able to buy into the international social contract, and non-Jews are allowed to buy into international social contract. Then his next argument is that war is legitimate under the international social contract, even if it's for no reason, which means that it's always mutter to carry on a bloody war against anybody.
Why does he think it's mutter even if it's for no reason?
What?
Because
he said, even though there are the Geneva Conventions, no one has ever followed them, which means that de facto that's not international law, and therefore you're allowed to... And why did he say this? Because the article was to justify Ariel Sharon's bloody reprisal raid against Kibiyah. Right? So he said, you're allowed to carry bloody reprisal raids against non-Jews, but they can't carry it against us. So the conclusion of this is extremely offensive. So, which is why I gave you the Maritz Chayes and not Rav Yisraeli.
How can we subject ourselves to social contract even within Israel?
Also, why don't non-Jews...
Good question.
I mean,
it's a very strange piece.
Really,
I don't...
It doesn't really work.
I mean, this might be a dumb question, I don't know, but why don't non-Jews also have their bodies belonging to God? If they were all created solo.
Because he bases it on a passage in Tanya. This is not a piece I endorse. I have twice or three times written, published or written things that will eventually be published critiquing this piece heavily, philosophically and halachically. In 53, 56. I don't know. For when I took a course on ethics of war, I wrote like a 25-page critique of this, both halachically and philosophically and ethically. One of my least favorite pieces that had ever been written. But what? What? I could send it to you. I'll send it to Tikva. Sure. Anyways. Okay. So to Chazar now, section 3. Right. So section 1. We pointed out that Hefker Bezin exists, and that it exists on two levels, on individual cases when Bezin needs to, or as takanot. They have the ability to set up laws. Then we said, okay, but what do they have the power to do? Do they have the power to relinquish rights or even give it? Seems to depend on the psukim. Then, section 2, we dealt with the question, is it a function of a kirsa from a Torah or not? Rashi said it wasn't. Rambam says it was, presumably because he had the kirsa Ella, which means that he thinks that Hefker Bezin is just a prot in Akiras Avraham HaTorah, and therefore it's constrained by the same rules, namely Migdar Milsa Shiny, that it's only to protect from Isurim. Rashi said it's not. So then what is it if it's not that? So this returned us to our Gemara, and basically there are three perspectives. Rashi and Tosfos and the Dvar Avraham spells this out, say it simply is. It's based on the Kol HaMem Shalah. The fact that government exists means they must have power, means they have control. That's all there is to it. Right? There's no lumpjes behind it. It's just de facto power. Might is right. That is all there is to it. That's why government works. Rashi says the same thing by Din Malchusa. The reason Din Malchusa works is because God wants there to be government. Once there's government, it has to have power, otherwise it's meaningless. And that's it. Right? God built into the fabric of the world is that there's government with power. That's possibility one. Possibility two, possibly, is the Ritva. That no, it's not just that, but they own the money. The government has actually owns it, and that's why he can compare it to Chirem in the Ozer Davar Shinu Shalom. The question is, why would they own it? So if you don't think it's social contract, which we got to at the end, perhaps it's because they control the monetary system, which is extremely evident in the modern world where currency depends simply on trust in the power. Hence, the dollar is so weak, right? Then you, all you have to do is look at the dollar-shekel ratio, and you'll see that the dollar is weak, the euro is weak, the Canadian dollar is weak, the Australian dollar is weak, right? They're all weak, right? They're all weak, right? The American dollar is down to 3.49, and the Canadian I think is supposed to go down 15% and not recover till sometime in 2015, right? The Australian dollar is down like 10%, right? The euro is down, right? They're all down because it depends on trust, and between a weaker government, less recovery, the government shutdown, all that stuff. So the world went into chaos, and people just don't trust the government. So money becomes devalued. So that's possibility two. Possibility three, which may be what is behind you but is not clear, is the notion of social contract, which is, no, the reason that Beis Din has the power to be mafker mammon is because people buy into the system.
And
the Maariv Chayis, right? That was the last source we saw, the Maariv Chayis and Taras Nevi'im, and also Rishali Yisraeli and Masa Kibiyah, is that it's social contract. Is that since law at its core is based on the notion that the government agrees to, right, act as the people's basically representatives to keep order in society. And in order to have order in society, we submit ourselves to government. Therefore, they have the right over money. Then you have to explain, if government is based on social contract, why can they have capital punishment? So, either you say you own your bodies, and then all the conclusions that can come from that, I won't rehash that, or you say, look, like the Maariv Chayis, that you come up with a different explanation, like Rodef, right? If you're going to undermine society, right? Which is basically the argument that who made in the ancient world in antiquity? What? It's sort of Socrates' argument, right? In Phaedo, right? That, right, I've bought into the system my entire life, right? Well, actually it makes more of a social contract argument now that I think about it. Whereas I bought into the system, now I have to buy into it even when I die. Well,
if you buy into the system, you buy into everything.
Right, but the question is, are you able to buy into killing yourself because you're not allowed to commit suicide? That's the
halachically.
Right, halachically. Right, I mean, this is all explaining.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I mean, the social contract, even on people's life, is, I mean, both are Israeli, but I guess at some level really is Phaedo. But okay. Okay. So that is section three. Just the last arrows I'd make, which I put here in brackets, was the question of, when we're talking at a Beis Din who can be mafkir, who are we talking about? Right, what type of Beis Din? So that's a machlokes, whether we're talking about, here I put it, these are the brackets, the Re'im, Rabbi Elazar Mizrahi, said basically it's anybody who the whole nation chooses, which implies very much that he has a social contract theory, right? These are not sources, I just put like bracket, like
where?
Above the Taras Nevi'im, I put it in the, right? Right, the Re'im says that if everyone agrees to a court, that's who it is, which is the logical conclusion of the Maariv Chayis, that anybody who is the recognized court is the recognized court. The Maharik has a fascinating sheet that it's any three people who are nimna to Beis Din. I don't know if that's so plausible. I think the rest of it was on the page before that, right? It was Eze Beis Din. The Mordechai says it's only the supreme Beis Din, Aiden Beis Din Shikwoto. The Ritva says it's called Beis Din Kavua, any real Beis Din, right? Not like a Zabla, right? Not like a Papa Beis Din, but a Kavua Beis Din, or even perhaps just the Gadol Hador, the Gadol Ha'ir, or just the leader has that, right? Also, and again, you can see how these things would play out into the question we said, right? If it's about power, right, then it might be the person who's objectively recognized or is the most powerful, and not some random people of three, unless they actually have power. If you think it's about social contract, it's, as the Re'im says, anybody who people agree. If you appoint them, then that's it. So that's obviously just a function of this question. Okay, so just to chazer it one more time, right? Section one was, there is Hefker Beis Din, both on the level, both ad hoc and the level of Takana. The two psukim seem to indicate the first pasuk, which talks about removing property, underscores their ability to relinquish. Then the nachlod underscores their ability to give property. That's maybe the difference between the two psukim. We seem to pasuk you can even give property. Section 2 is it a function of kiryas arba or not? Rashi says it's not. The Rambam says it is, presumably because he had the word Ella, and therefore it's some function of it. Therefore, it's constrained by Migdar Milsa. Rashi thinks it's not. Then what is it? Three positions. Either Koach HaMemshalah, it just is. It's the power of government. Government has to work, which means it needs to have power. Possibility 2 is that because government controls the monetary system, at some level they're owners of it. And possibility 3 is that it's social contract, which is the Maritz Chayas. And then the last question, which is which Bezdin, and this is again a function of those questions, is either Ein Bezdin Shemukmoto, it's the top Bezdin in the land, or any recognized Bezdin, or any Gadol Ador, any leader, or any Bezdin of 3, or the Reims position, which is the most clear, like the Maritz Chayas, which is anybody who the nation agrees to. And that, in a nutshell, is Hefker Bezdin, and we're done.